my name's Amy and I'm an addict.
Hi, Amy.
You know, I'll go to the side. If I go in behind it, I'm trying to hide something, and I really don't want to do that. Again, my name's Amy and I'm an addict. My clean date is 3/20/08. By God's grace and mercy, I've just for today. Step 8 and step 9. What I want to first thank Bull Mountain Highlands Retreat for asking me. And I get that little messenger pop up on Facebook, you know, and you respond to it, and it's somebody who says, I need something, you know, what are you doing this weekend, da-da-da. And I just want to thank, you know, the programming committee for believing and thinking that I have something to share. Wow. Step 8. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them. Making that list. You know, and I like that step 8 tells me that I proceed with step 8 as if there's no step 9. Just like I proceeded with step 4, as with this, there's no step 5. Just taking that task in hand. Because the thought of having to face some people for some of the things that I did probably would have stopped me from doing the work that was required in step 8. I humbled myself and I prayed. And I sat down and I made the list. You know, part of the list was real easy for me. I could sit and write off, you know, like my children, my ex-husband, my grandmother, my family. I could write those real easy. But I had to go back and take a look. Thank God for that fearless moral inventory that I did. And take a look at what I did. And then look at 6 and 7, why I did it. And that gave me more ability to write my list for step 8. And all it was writing a list. And praying every day that I became willing to make amends to them. I didn't have to go to them. It wasn't time yet. God hadn't set the stage. But I had to sit and I had to write that list. And what my sponsor had me do also with writing the list, I read the basic text. I read the It Works, How and Why. I did the questions in the step working guide. I wrote the list. And then I had to write what I did to each and every person. You know, and thank God that they told me that the literature says I could write a separate financial list. Because, see, what I did to support my habit is that I became you. If you had good credit, I became you. And I stole your credit. And I would just search the internet. I didn't know the faces. I didn't know the people that I was destroying. But I stole identities. That's what I did. So there left those faceless, nameless people that I never really knew, that I never could. But the financial institutions were who I owed the financial amends to. And I made my list. And you know, I know that everyone that I may have to make amends to, I have not made amends to. Even though I've worked my step 9, 10, 11, and 12. God hadn't set the stage yet to do some step 9 work. Financially, I don't know if I'll ever be able to make amends to the institutions that I robbed from. You know, but I do know that life has a funny way of showing up. Because I wrote a bad check in my name. In my name, not in your name, but in my name. I wrote a bad check in 2006. Had my little court issue with it. Made a couple payments, quit paying. Made a couple payments, quit paying. It's now 2014. About 2 weeks before I got asked to speak here, I get a note posted on my door by the Bench Warrant Task Force. Bright red letters, everything posted on it. Go to my sponsor. You know, I knew what I did. I knew what I did. I knew that the check amount I had paid off, the original court I had paid off, I should be down to about $75. But when they posted on my door, it's $285, and I don't understand why. Well, because I keep sending the constable out to find me. You know, so every time he comes out and knocks on my door and I'm not there, there's another charge. So I call the court and I tell them, you know, I said, I made a $50 payment online. Can I set up on a payment plan? No, you failed 6 other payment plans already. This is where step 9 really comes into play. Financially, I am able to make this amends. I was never willing to take the money out of my pocket and make that amends. But God set the stage. He truly set the stage. So in this meantime, between the time that I, on payday, I'll be able to make this, but I've got a week of, if anybody comes through, I'm not home. I had told my son that. I told my fiance that. My daughter came to visit. I told her that if somebody comes to the door, I'm not home. But you know what? God has set a peace in me. Because if they do, they look at income taxes, which they have the ability to do. They could find out where I work. You know, they could do some research. They could. I found out where people work. I did the research. They can definitely do the research and find out where I work. And they could have come to my job and taken me away in handcuffs. And you know, my story was never one of jails. By God's grace and mercy, I was arrested. My most time in jail was 4 hours in a federal lockup because of my history. But I was at peace enough that if I had, and when I called the constable and told him I made the $50 payment, he told me to call the court, blah, blah, blah. I did that. And he said, just to let you know, they usually give you $45 credit for every day incarcerated. So I do the calculation. This gives me a week in jail. You know, if I go, I go for a week. The only thing I was worried about was a job, was my job. I was at peace enough that if I went to jail for the first time in my life, and I had to sit at ACJ for the first time in my life, I was okay going to jail clean. Because, see, God had set the stage in me that it was time to make that amends. You know, I humbled myself. I called them. They came, I made the payment. I called them back. I said, I made the payment. They said, okay, well, we won't process it till Monday. So I drove around with this thing in my purse, in my car. This is my receipt for my payment from online, that because they weren't going to tell the constable until Monday. So I drove around. I was more fearful for those 72 hours. Than going to jail, knowing that I had already made my amends financially. But see, what I had done is I had robbed the system for so long and done so much damage that, you know, that's his mercy. That was God's mercy that I didn't go, because for what I've done, I should have been. I should be locked up many times over. You know, but that step 8 gave me the ability to make that list, take a real good look, and keep a separate financial list. You know, and becoming willing. You know, it says, you know, like, I came here and I cried victim. When I got clean, I cried victim. I got high because you did this to me. I got high because you did that to me. I came from a 22-year abusive relationship. When I got here, I blamed my using on that relationship. And that worked for a moment. When I got to step 8, that no longer worked. See, somewhere along the line, I had to look at the part I played. And I was no longer a victim, but I became a willing participant because I stayed. I stayed in that relationship. And rather than leaving and working on me, I picked up to mask what I was feeling. So the work that the other steps brought me to get to there, I couldn't cry victim when I got to step 8. And I couldn't say, well, I don't owe him an amends because of everything he did to me. Just because somebody has done me dirty doesn't mean give me the right to do them dirty. And when I do them dirty, I owe an amends. When I cause harm, whether with my mouth, my actions, my lack of words, or my lack of action. You know, because it's not about just what I do and say. It can sometimes be what I don't do and what I don't say that causes more harm than what I do and say. And that took a lot for me to realize. But in my process, I forgave my ex-husband. Through forgiving him, it gave me the ability to go ask him for forgiveness. Because see, when I got clean, I got a divorce. I got clean. I got a divorce. But I told him all the time, you're the reason I got high. You're the reason I got high. You're the reason I got high. I did the work on me, but I never told him until I got to step 9 that he wasn't the reason I got high. That I made a choice to get high. So I had to make an amends to him. And saying sorry was not... Saying sorry for me is not an amends. Our literature tells us saying sorry is not as amends. Because you know what? I became as sorry as my sorries were. You know, but I know in order to be forgiven, I had to forgive what some people did to me. You know, and I had to humble myself and say, God, I need some help. Because some damage truly was done to me. But I just didn't. Most people learned how to talk, how to get it out, how to do something other than mask all the damage that was done. I didn't know how to do that. I just covered and stuffed and covered and stuffed and covered and stuffed. And I used because I didn't want to feel. And when I felt bad for using, I just used some more because then I didn't have to feel the guilt and the shame that I had for using in the first place. That step 8 let me write that list, pray on a daily basis to be able to go to these people, to be able to go to... I robbed the community. You know, I robbed my community because I made some commitments to my community. I made some commitments to schools. I made some commitments because I had children. I had young children. My youngest daughter was 12 when I got clean. My oldest was 20 when I got clean. So they grew up in my addiction. I made some commitments to their schools that I couldn't stand up and do. I owed amends to the schools. It wasn't financial. It wasn't something that I could just go and say, sorry, I didn't show up 4 years ago and somebody else had to do the job for me. But what I do today is I go and I show up. That's how I'm able to make that amends. And I had to talk to my sponsor and I had to talk to some other people. How do I make amends to these institutions? You know, the PA unemployment system had a real good way of making amends. File your income tax and they take it. You make amends to them. You know, whether I'm willing to or not, they're going to take it. You know, I became willing because I prayed. I talked to my sponsor. I talked to some people. And I said, they said, God set the stage. The time is now. Whether you think you're ready or not, God knew better. God knows better. And he was like, you know, I was counting on some unemployment because I went back and I ended up working in a school district. So in the summertime, I get unemployment. Well, because I owed that, and they took it for my income tax. I was like, okay, but I'll come file for unemployment. They said, no way. You have to serve your time. Yes, you paid all that money back, but for every week you robbed us, you got to serve a week and not collect anything. Okay, so that's called paybacks, real paybacks. So... And here was the hit. I still had a child at home, and I went, okay, I'll file for welfare, aid to families. They said, no. See, even though you don't get that money, for welfare's point of view, you're claiming that money. It's payback. So you're double paying back. See, God has a real funny sense of humor. When you go to make amends, when I went to make amends, let's make this about me. When I went to make amends to some things and to some people, what my idea of amends and what his idea of amends were two different things. So they took my money. I had to pay back the weeks and not get the unemployment. And welfare said, no, we count that. So instead of getting X amount of dollars in food stamps, you qualify for $22 a month in food stamps. I have no income. I have bills. I have a 17-year-old daughter. And the only thing I have is $22 a month in food stamps. So I'm out there, I'm looking, I'm searching for jobs, I'm doing part-time jobs, I'm doing this, that, and the other, I'm doing whatever I can, going through temp agencies. I never missed a bill. I humbled myself, I became willing, and God made sure that all my needs were taken care of. All my bills were paid. I always had food on my table. And I was able to school shop for my daughter for the next year, for her senior year. That was not my doing. I humbled myself, you know, and that humility part was so important to me in step eight, because I was one who, and it was taught to me way before step eight, but it really applied in step eight, because I was the one who, I was brought up, if you want something done, do it yourself. If you tell me no long enough, I'll never ask you again for any help. You know, but this program taught me I have to ask for help, I have to pray, I have to surrender, I have to get on my knees, and I have to stay vigilant in what I'm doing. You know, and that commitment of writing that list, because I would write it and I would think of some things and life will go on, and then I will be like, oh wait, I owe that person an amends. And right now I can be real honest and say I'm acting out on some things that I'm putting people on an eighth list again. And the first person that's going to go on that eighth list is myself. Because I'm doing some things and I'm standing for some behaviors that are damaging me. You know, because I was on my list. I was on my list my first time around. Because I caused myself some harm. I used to, getting high, I used to pray that I let it be the last hymn. God, don't let me wake up. But don't let my children find me with a needle in my arm. But don't let me wake up. Or the next time he hits me, let me die from it. Because I'm so tired of getting beat down. Let me die from it. God had another plan. You know, but I'm standing for some behaviors. And they're my behaviors. See, I've gone through my steps. And my sponsor has me living the program right now for a little bit. You know, I've been blessed with some things in this program. I have a fiance. I'm set to get married in May. And, you know, when I got her here and I thought about some things and I prayed for some things and I said, God, give me a man. Give me a man that you want me to have. Give me a good man. You know, because I know how to do a doggish man. I know how to stay in that relationship. I know how to rescue you. I know how to save you. I know how to dress you up and make you what I want you to be. But let me step out of the way and let me have a good man. God gave me a good man, and I didn't know what to do. So I'm acting out on some behaviors, and I go to bed every night, and I do the 10th step. And I'm like, I know I'm doing wrong, and I don't know how to stop it. I have that obsession and that compulsion, and I don't know how to stop it. And I'm so glad that when I was asked to do the step 8 and 9, it's like, you're building a new list. Why do you want to build a new list? This made me take a real good look at myself. So I quit answering the phone to some phone calls that I don't need to be in conversation with, because they're not conducive to my life now. But that obsession and compulsion has me answer the phone, answer the phone, answer the phone. You want to hear what's being said on the other end of the line. But by hearing what's said on the other end of the line, I'm starting a new eighth list. A new list for step 8. And from that means I have to go to step 9. And to step 9, I have to be honest. I have to be real honest. See, step 9 tells me to make amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure yourself or others. I was not walking into the magistrate's office and say, here I am. I was not that willing. Because that would cause me some injury, because I would have went to jail. And I would have, like I said, I was at peace with myself if I went to jail for 7 days. But then here's, I'm going to lose my job. That's an injury that I'm going to cause to myself. You know, so God laid the stage where I could do some things. And make the payment and not turn myself in and not have to go to jail. And not injure myself and my family. You know, there's some things I did that I can't. My grandmother's 98 years old. She was my biggest victim in my addiction. She was my biggest addiction. She was my biggest victim. Because she raised me. She did everything for me. She allowed me. When my grandfather died, for 15 years I took care of her. In my addiction, I took care of my grandmother. That also gave me the ability to take her MAC card whenever I wanted. It gave me the ability to create credit cards. She had excellent credit ratings. I would get $10,000 credit cards in her name on a monthly basis. I walked into car dealerships with $10,000 credit cards and bought new cars. I took my money and I paid my bills. And I got high with it. I paid all my bills on credit cards. Her credit cards, her name, and whoever else's name I could take. I also went and I took her CDs. And I cashed them in without power of attorney. But I just knew how to forge. And I did it. You know, she's now 98. She knows what I did. You know, I have 6.5 years clean. At 92, she found out what I, at 91, she found out what I did. It was a hard piece not to talk to my grandmother. It was a hard piece not to speak to the rest of my family, because I had just developed a relationship with them again because of some choices that I made earlier in my life. And I was just becoming part of the family again, and now I've ostracized myself by my own actions. But I can go to my grandmother now. I have not been able to make financial amends, but I have taken financial responsibility for all those credit cards I took in her name. When I did my ninth step, I sat down with a financial advisor and I wrote down and what I took and what I did in her name. The names that I knew that I stole, I took financial responsibility for. It's on my credit rating now. It's showing payments. I don't know if I'll ever be able to financially pay it back. But I'm doing what's responsible. That's what step 9 told me to do. Be responsible for my actions. I had to take it and do it all for me. To clear my mind, to clear my heart. I walk in to see my grandmother, and she's not all mentally with me now. But I walk into our apartment, and I'll identify myself. She's legally blind, so she can't see. And I'll identify myself. And the first thing she says to me on a repeated basis is, "You stole from me." I'll say, "Yeah, I did, Nana. Yeah, I did." And I'll go back next week, and she'll do the same thing. "You stole from me." And I'll say, "Yeah, I did, Nana." And she says, one day she says, "Why do you keep coming here if all I ever do is tell you you stole from me?" And I say, "It's because to show you that I'm not the person who's going to steal from you ever again. And if the only way that I can show you is by showing up here every week and letting you tell me I'm a thief, then that's what I do." You know, I make amends to my children on a daily basis. See, I no longer feel guilty for what I did. I'm responsible. I'm there for my children today. I have grandchildren today that I go get every weekend. Grandma goes and gets them, and I take them, and I do some things, you know, with my grandchildren. See, I was the kind of addict who I was there for my children. I take you to your game. I wasn't the soccer mom, but I was the football mom, the basketball mom, the softball mom, the deck hockey mom, the volleyball mom, whatever sport my kids were in, whatever activity where they were, I took them. I'd run to the bathroom, get high, come back and sit in the bleachers. Run to the bathroom, get high, come back and sit to the bleachers. We go to the Pirates game. Run to the bathroom, get high, come back and sit and watch. And every 15 minutes they want to know what was wrong with me. I said my stomach was upset. No, I'm in there and I'm putting a needle in my arm. Or I'm snorting something up my nose. I was there. When I got clean, my kids didn't know how to deal with me leaving the house without them to come to meetings to get clean, to stay clean, you know, and to stand by some rules and to stand by some responsibility, because I, like, my kids wouldn't do it. I was high, so I would clean the house. They didn't have to do their chores because I zoomed around the house and did the chores for them. Well, now I don't take everything on anymore. My children have to do what they, you know, what they had to do. And they were like, "What is wrong with you?" They thought I had lost my mind because I made them do their chores now. And what it was is that, you know, my amends to my children was to let them grow up instead of doing everything for them. That was part of my amends to my children, you know, is to teach them to be responsible young adults. I have two addicts in the making. And the most The hardest thing to do is to sit back and let them go through their process. You know, out of three children, two are addicts. I know it. You know, I recognize all the signs. Hardest thing to do is let them be their addicts. Let them be themselves. You know, saying I'm sorry did not precise making amends. I had to change my ways. I had to change who I was. I don't rob institutions. I don't rob people anymore. That was the change. If I say I'm going to do something, I show up and I stand behind my commitment. If I can't stand behind my commitment, I let you know ahead of time. I just don't not show up. And if I can't show up, I try to find somebody who is worthy to fill the place that you think that I'm worthy to have. And if it's just something as easy as standing at a door, if I can't be the greeter for my home group, I'll call some other home group members. I'm not going to leave it for the chair that's built. I'll find some other home group members to take that. I make amends by showing up and giving back what was so freely given to me. Because there's some amends, there's some people I can never pay back. There's some people that I can't say I'm sorry to because I don't know who they are. You know, it was really funny this past year. In December, my birthday's in December, I get a phone call from my high school sweetheart. Now remember I told you, I didn't know how to do good guys. I knew how to do dogs. He was a good guy. And I forgot that I broke his heart. I forgot I broke his heart. You know, I'm coming up on my 30-year class reunion just happened. I forgot I broke his heart. I did. It was like one of those things that I really forgot about. He called me to wish me happy birthday. I don't know how he got my number. I found out afterwards. I found out. But I had really forgotten. He had moved across the state, across the country. You know, he went to the army to make a life for us. You know, I had a promise ring, blah, blah, blah. He left and I went crazy. So I caused him some harm. When all this was going on and I finally got a good man in my life and I was trying to do right by him, he calls me to wish me happy birthday. God set the stage for me to make amends to him, to tell him, I apologize for hurting you. I'm so glad that you're doing well. And we now, through social media, get to conversate with each other. And it's nothing other than, how are you? How's your family? How's life treating you? I can be a friend to him today when I had done some damage to him years ago. My mother, I wouldn't let her be a mother because I said I was raised by my grandparents. My mother left me when I was two. I thought, I suffered with that abandonment issue all my life. I thought she had abandoned me. What I came to find out is she gave me the greatest gift, two loving parents, my grandparents, and made the greatest sacrifice in her life was to give up her child. Here she was an addict. You know, I now have a relationship at 42 years old. Is when I developed a relationship with my mother. And here what it was is that when she tried to step back in my life, I was so angry and so bitter I wouldn't allow her. This program got me to a point where I let go of that bitterness, I let go of that anger, and I no longer cried victim, and I made amends to her because she wanted to be my mother. She wanted to be in my life, and I wouldn't allow her. Now, my mother calls me. We talk. She lives in Florida, so we can't see each other that much. She came home for a funeral, and I said, Mom, will you come home for something good next year? And she says, what's that? And I said, will you come home for my wedding? My mother is tickled pink to be part of this wedding. I'll be 48 years old. My mother will be 68 years old, and she is just like doting like I'm this little girl that she gets to plan a wedding for. She's planning a wedding from Florida for what's going to happen up here. You know, that's some amends that I have in a relationship with her today. It's only through the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It's only through doing the steps. And I could not get to step 8 and 9 unless I would, on a daily basis, do 1, 2, and 3. Sit down and do that fearless moral inventory in 4 and 5. Look at my behaviors and ask God to remove them in 6, 7 so that I can start to mend some things that I did. And that was step 8 and 9. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thanks, Amy. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Will S. from the We Surrender Group of NA.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named Will. Good job. Thanks. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for asking a hope to die dope fiend like myself to hopefully carry a message of hope. And, you know, it was crazy because I was listening to Alan last night and he got me reminiscing, and I started thinking about stuff when he's sitting there sharing, you know, and he talked about smoking a lot of PCP. I was the one that yelled out, me too. You know what I mean? But that's not something that's common in this area. I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I wasn't raised here. I've actually been here now longer than I was there. I was born and raised there until I was 18 years old. And the reason I'm telling you this is because, like, when he was talking about that, I started thinking about the behaviors and shit that I learned growing up. You know, I grew up on, there's a street called Lombard Street, and it's in between, I grew up in between Martin Luther King Boulevard and Arlington Avenue. And that little stretch right there, anybody who's been down there knows that it's nothing but degradation. You know what I mean? It's just an utter mess down there. And, you know, but I didn't know none of that. I didn't know none of that growing up. You know what I mean? I thought it was normal. You know, and I started, and the reason that I'm talking about this is because a lot of times what we learn, you know, when I did my step work, like, I started to realize the things that I did to the people that are on that list was the things that I learned growing up. You know what I mean? Like my children's mom, you know, having her on the list, it's because I watched what my dad did to my mother. You know what I mean? And I watched all those behaviors and I learned it. And for the longest time, like, he was on my 4-step but wasn't on my 8-step. You know what I mean? Because I was unaware of the fact that, like, it's not my job. You're not my job. You're my father. I was supposed to be your job. You know what I mean? And I didn't understand. I didn't understand that, you know, and that's what I found out, that the A step is about growing the fuck up. You know what I mean? It's about understanding that, you know, so you want these children to forgive you. But you're going to forget about how about he wants you to forgive him. You know, how about she wants you to forgive her? Because to her, she did the best she could. You know, I forget the fact that she's an addict too. And I forget the fact that she blamed him for why she did what she did. You know, my father spent 37 years in the Maryland State Penitentiary. And, you know, when he would come home, he'd get back in and he'd make these great promises, you know. I'm talking about the attitudes, actions, and behaviors that I was learned. I'm talking about, you know, what led up in 1 through 7 that made up that list in 8. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about doing things to people, see, but having so many things to mask the pain because I never really wanted to be that guy inside. You know what I mean? But I'm talking about, like, you know, if you don't know, you don't know, but, like, I'm talking about being in an environment, man, that's got me on guard at all times because, you see, I don't fit the mold of the description of the people around me. So it had me on guard at all times. You know, and like, I can concur now that I live in this environment. I can concur with that, with the black person who lives in an all-white environment with a bunch of racist people around, because I was living on the other side of that spectrum growing up. You know what I mean? So I always had to put on this front, like, I always had to be somebody that I didn't want to be, and I'm talking about far before the drugs. You know, and thank God, step one taught me that it ain't about the drugs; it's about me. So, by the time that I got to 8 and started the growing up process, I already knew that I was the problem. You know, because I had some sponsors that was drumming that. I remember in step one, I said, she won't let me see the kids. And he said, how come? And I had started to take a little bit of responsibility because she's tired of my shit. And he's like, well, how come? You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, because I made her mad and now she don't want me to hurt the kids no more. And he's like, well, how come? You know what I mean? And how'd Alan say? This motherfucker. You know what I mean? I'm in step one. I ain't well at all. I'm in step, you know what I mean? I'm in step eight and I ain't well at all. So, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe I should show you what I learned in Baltimore. You know, because I was just an angry individual. And I realize now that I was just a hurt individual. I couldn't understand. I heard the gentleman up there talking, you know, and about relationships and intimacy. Man, I heard the gentleman talk about, like, the pain that he felt. Like, why, man? Why didn't you stick around? You know what I mean? Like, why did you run and leave me? You know? I was a helpless little boy. You know what I mean? And I sit about, and I sit and I think about all those things, like the molestation when I was growing up, and blaming him, and blaming her. You know what I mean? And then through the process, you know, I just want to talk about the behaviors led me to be somebody that I didn't want to be. So consequently, there were some people and some things that I did to some people that I had to put on this list. And that's all it really is. It's just a list. It's a list of all the people I harmed, not that, you know, well, you know, well, you know. You know. If you wouldn't have did what you did, I wouldn't have did what I did. You know. That's not what this list is about. This list is about what did I do to you, you know. And that's what I found out. And I tried to complicate it. Some people said, listen, it's a damn list. Make it. You know what I mean? And then I found out after I made the list, like, I had to get some willingness. You know what I mean? I had to get some willingness to make some amends to some people in life. And what I'm talking about is, like, some of the things that I did. You know what I mean? Because I'm not proud of myself. But the person I am getting high is I'm so self-centered. I'm so caught up in me. Like, and the behaviors that I learned, like, you're going to do what I want you to do. You're going to give me what I want. If not, I'm going to take it. Either way, we're going to get accomplished what we came here to get accomplished. You know, and that's just how I live my life. You know what I mean? So consequently, there was a lot of deep amends to be made. You know, because I was a brutal dude. Like, I learned non-existent virtues growing up in them streets, man. Like, things that like, I would never take my kids into that environment and raise them because I never want them to see what I saw. You know what I mean? But I didn't have the ability to make sure that something like that's not going to happen when I first got here. Because what I knew is what they taught me. What I knew is what I grew up with. So no matter what, and the literature talks about, you know, some of the worst crimes were committed on good intentions. I had all the good intentions in the world. Like, I wanted to be the dad that he never was. You see? But what I didn't understand is I lacked the ability and the knowledge to take care of that business like I really wanted to. So, you know, I'm talking about, and I just want to share this in the It Works How and Why in the eighth step. It talks about, there may be instances in which we inflicted harm so severe that the situation simply can't be set right. And it goes on to say, this may be readily apparent as we look at our relationships with those who have been in our lives for quite some time. Over the years, we have involved our families, partners, and long-term friends in one painful situation after another. Even though we can't undo the past, our experience has shown that we still need to look at what we've done and acknowledge the damage we caused. And then it goes on to say, despite the impossibility of changing what happened, we can start to make amends by not repeating the same behaviors. Listen, I can't take back the fact that I cheated on their mom countless amounts of times. I can't take that back. There's nothing I can do about that. I did it. You know what I mean? I can't take back the fact that, like, I've knocked her out. You know what I mean? Because she told me the truth, and I don't like the truth. You know what I mean? We had a disagreement. We had a disagreement, and it landed her knocked out. You know, because I was a punk. I was a punk. I was a real punk. I was this dude who grew up in an environment, and I would fight anybody. So I thought I was this real tough guy. You know what I mean? And I thought that I was just this king shit. And I found out that I was a dude that didn't know how to deal with life, and I ran at all costs. So consequently, I was a punk. You know? And, I'm still a punk sometimes. I still don't deal with life very well. The only difference is I walk through it now. you know. And so I'm talking about, I can't take this stuff back from her. You know what I mean? And I don't know if she's ever going to let this go. You know? I don't know that. But the literature tells me I don't need to worry about that. The literature tells me I just need to take care of my side of the street. You know what I mean? But it also says, you know, the literature also tells me that it's not about I'm sorry. It's not about I'm sorry. You know what I mean? You know how many times? Baby, I swear to God, I know I landed in her, but I'm not going to do that no more. Why? Why? All of a sudden, what you're going to be a better wife to me? And why? Because it was never about you in the first place. You know what I mean? It was never about her while I was sleeping with the other woman anyway. You know what I mean? It was always about the fact that I was a short, fat, bald-headed white dude. You know what I mean? That I didn't like myself because you told me that wasn't acceptable. You know? So that's what it was about to begin with. It was never about her. You know what I mean? She was a great woman. She was a great... I've had the ability, I don't know how, but I've had the ability as a jackass to get some really good women in my life. You know? And, you know, she... You know, I did some things that I'm not proud of. You know what I mean? You know, and she's one of those things, you know, and consequently, because she's one of those things, so is he and she. And I'm talking about my son and my daughter. You know, because like I said, although I had the best intentions in the world when we made him, I ran because I'm a coward when we made him, because I didn't know how to be a father. And I left her all alone to be this boy's everything. And there's a reason why I'm getting this down and dirty about this. And there's a reason why I'm letting these emotions out. Because, you know, then this little girl comes along. Because she's going to leave me. Because she found my little thing in somebody else. So now she's going to leave me. So consequently, I sabotage her. And I talk her into having sex with me one more time, and I impregnate her to keep her. You know, this disease is insidious. What would allow me to believe that this is going to turn out okay? You know? But for some reason, this sounds like a great idea, don't it? You know? I'll just get her pregnant again. She ain't got no choice but to stay. And she did. She stayed. You know, and the day came where, you know, she told me the truth. And you know, I just remember growing up in Baltimore. Like I was a menace to society. I really was. I remember we were sitting on the steps, because I don't know about y'all, but that's what we do in Baltimore. Everybody sits on the damn steps. Come 7 o'clock at night, you know what I mean? Everybody wakes up. I think they get a shower around 7:30, you know what I mean? And then everybody just sits out on the steps. Music is real loud coming out of the door. That's all right, I'm louder than you. And you know what? And everybody, it's just one big party, and that's what it's like, you know. And it was just a crazy environment. And anytime somebody would walk down the street that we didn't know, God bless them, you know. And I remember I hit this dude with a trash bag for no reason, you know. And then he turns around and wants to fight me. Imagine that, you know. And about 15 of us jump. And we put him, in ICU, man. You know, but that's just one incident that I'm talking about. Like, this was the norm for us. We were that hideous, man. We hated ourselves so bad that that's what we did to people. You know, and I just remember this dude telling me the truth. Once I told you I hate the truth. You know, I don't mind me telling you the truth. I hate when you tell me the truth. And I remember this dude said, you know what? When I first met you, Will, you was on top of things. Now you ain't nothing but a no good rip-off artist. You know what I mean? So we had a disagreement. He ended up knocked out. And that's what that's how my life was. Like, anytime you told me the truth, I'm going to run. You know, I'm going to run from the truth, and I'm going to run from the truth, and I'm going to run from the truth. You know, and so she told me the truth one day. and I knocked her out. And it was the start of my process. Because, like I told you, I never wanted to be that guy. I never wanted to be that guy. And that look on her face when I woke up the next morning. And I'm this jokester. Like, I like to joke about everything. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's just certain people, but it seems to be the Baltimore thing. We'll just joke and act like it didn't happen. You know? And I remember saying, damn, what happened to you? And I tell this story all the time, man. This was the most awful look I've ever seen on a human being. And she said, you. And I remember signing myself into rehab the very next day. And I ain't gonna tell you I got multiple white key tags. I ain't gonna tell you that's when it all began, and you know, and everything started to come together and make sense. And that's not what happened, you know. But there was a lot of I'm sorries, I'm not gonna do it again, and a lot of other things happened. And you know what? And I thought this woman would never forgive me, you know. You know, so the drugs had a way of just making me a person that, like, you know, I never wanted to be. You know, I got another relationship, you know, that I get with this girl, you know, and moms are real pushovers when it comes to kids, and the dads are the disciplinaries. This is the psychological bullshit I tell myself. And, you know, this kid don't listen to her. He ain't my kid. He's her kid. But he don't listen to her, and I'm playing house because we've been together for, you know, 3 weeks. So, you know what I mean? I'm going to show you how to raise your kid, even though I got two that I ain't never raised. So I'm going to show you how to raise your kid, and I spank him, and I lose my temper one morning when there ain't no coke in my system, and I'm mad at the world, you know, because I ain't got no weed to come down of the fact that I ain't got no coke in my system, and I'm going ballistics, and I spank this kid too hard. And the father's a little bit upset about this. You know? So, he presses charges against me. So there's no contact. No contact. And gotta set the stage, right? Gotta set the stage, you know, because I can't call her. I can't talk to her. I can't tell this little boy I'm so sorry now, you know. But gotta set the stage. And I'm at a softball tournament, you know. And there she is. She's staring at me and I'm staring at her. And she's staring at me and I'm staring at her. And my heart is jumping out of my chest. And she's staring at me and I'm staring at her. And I look over at my fiance and I'm like, remember the kid that I'm telling you about? She's like, yeah, and I think that's her. It takes me about 25 minutes, but I finally get this courage, you know, because, like, the reality is I did this and I need to man up to it. And I finally get the courage and I walk up to her and it ain't her. Look just like her, same clothes, but it ain't her. So, you know what I mean? But what happened was that I walked through some courage with that. I walked in, and I'm not a very courageous person. I'm a loud, crazy individual, but I'm not a very courageous person when you look at the definition of the word courage. You know, I'm that guy that looks courageous, but inside I'm always trembling. You know, it took me a long time to figure that out. You know, them non-existent virtues had me really locked and loaded in what wasn't reality. You know, you know, so I don't know if I'll ever be able to make these amends to this woman and this child, but I know this: if God ever sets the stage and puts her and him in my path, I will make those amends. I will take care of my street, whether he accepts or not, whether she accepts or not. You know, because it's not about whether she accepts. All I know is that I really, really, really don't like the fact that I did that. And I know that I don't like the fact that I did that because I don't put my hands on kids no more. You know, and that's the difference. You know, so 4.5 years clean, you know, I go to this fiance, this ex with the two kids. It's Christmas Eve, and I say to her, I need to talk to you. And she said, okay. And by this time, we've started to we've started to patch up some rough areas, you know. And years have gone by. So I needed to talk to her, and I just felt like the time was right. It was Christmas Eve, and you know, I was probably out of fear. Sounded like a great time. Who's upset on Christmas Eve? You know, whatever the case may be, that's the day God told me this is time to do it. And I went and I told her, I said, listen, man, I'm really sorry. And she said, for what? And I said, everything that I've done to you, everything that I've put you through. And she said, I know. And I forgive you. You know, and I never thought this woman, I'm talking about beating on her. I'm talking about, at one point in time, I remember her sitting there like, we're watching a movie. Sitting on the opposite ends of the couch. And she's counting on her fingers. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like thinking about all the women you slept with, you crud ball. And you know what I mean? And this is the type. And you know what I mean? And literature talks about, it ain't always about the physical pain. Sometimes it's about what we put people through emotionally. What we put people through mentally. You know what I mean? You know how many times, like, I've brutally, you were talking about never calling her out of her. You know how many times I've been brutal to that woman verbally? You know what I mean? This was a good, faithful woman. I called her every name that you could possibly degrade a woman with that she didn't deserve. I never thought she'd forgive me. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous, and thank you, God. No, thank you. Thank you for the sign of desperation when, you know, I just remember the sign of desperation when I had to tell these, because like, you know, my dad always went to prison, so I always went to prison. That was the path, you know. So I look at the kids, daddy, see you in a little bit, you know. And if that's how it was no big thing. You go to jail, you know. And but this time, nah, it wasn't like that. You know, it sucked, and it killed me. It killed me inside, man. And I'll never forget the spiritual pain that I felt that day. You know, there's something about after you get here and learn some things, and then you go do the opposite of what you learn. There's something about the pain that comes from that. And if you don't know the pain that I'm talking about, like I'm trying to tell you, you know, keep getting high with this head full of recovery, and you'll find out. You know what I mean? Because it will either do what the literature says and bring about a more rigorous approach to the program, or we'll wear a black suit. One or the other. And for me, you know, maybe God saw something in me that I didn't know I had. You know, and I remember staring at this ugly ass mirror. You know, the mirrors are blurry and crazy looking in jail. You know what I mean? You look like the dude in the funhouse when you're trying to look at yourself. You know what I mean? But the vision to me was clear. You're a piece of shit, just like they told me. And that was my last clean day. That was February 20th, 2009. And I've been clean ever since. You know? So I'm talking about like this amends process, man. I'm talking about, you know, the amends to this woman that still continue to go because the fiance I got in my life now, I don't cheat on. You know, I'm talking about I got with her when I first got clean. Because when I first got clean, I wasn't well yet. And we got into a disagreement. You know? And she ain't get knocked out. You know? But it wasn't pretty. You know, I'm not talking about, I didn't get clean and everything changed overnight. You know what I mean? These non-existent virtues was deep-rooted in me. You know, so I'm talking about the amends process that continues to happen. You know, that's the indirect amends that I can't make. That only that change in me that takes place is what's doing it. I'm talking about my little 2-year-old son that me and her have together. He knows nothing about what those first two know. And when I come in from work, he comes running. Daddy, I love you. You know, he wraps his arms around me. Brittany, he's a beautiful baby, ain't he?
Yes, he is.
You know, and he's done something to my heart that, you know, and the way he lights up when daddy comes home, man. You know, and the reason I'm so touchy about this subject, I was telling my sponsor, man, I hate Laurel Mountain Highlands. They always give me these damn topics right where I'm at. You know, God puts Laurel Mountain Highlands in my life and says, here, he's dealing with this shit right now. Let him speak about that. You know, I had like a year and a half clean. I come here and, you know, I ain't working on shit. They asked me to speak on just for today. And here I got a wardrobe making drug dealer jealous. Yeah, I got the pretty little newcomer. I got 18 months clean. She got 18 seconds. You know, they hit me just for today. They talks about that hole. Trying to fill that hole with everything. Man, this place is brutal. This place is brutal. And I'm talking about the amends, man. I'm talking about the amends that I owe to this woman. And, you know, I'm talking about the amends that I owe to this kid. The indirect amends that I'm making to this kid, that I'm making to these kids through this kid. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about, like, she gets her ass whooped again. Because of me, not by me. The forgiveness has come so full circle that when her husband starts getting high, why don't you go talk to Will? Because whatever Will did has worked for him. Literature tells me some of this shit, they may never forgive you. Now, I understand through this growing up process, through the process of I'm not the end-all, see-all judgment of everything that took place in 6, 7, and 8. It's not for me to play God and figure out, you know what I mean, who's worthy of being judged and who isn't. I found that out. You know? So, she tells him this. What this man hears is, I still love Will. And beats her ass. Wow. You know, wow. Right in front of my kids. This man gets clean. He tries to go to NA, man. He tries to get his life together. This man walks up to me in a meeting and asks me if I can sponsor him. And I'm talking about there was a point in time when I first got clean. I had like 18 months and I had never been their parent. I'm talking about before this man started getting high, I walked up to him humbly and said, will you teach me how to be a father? Ain't nothing worse than asking your ex's husband if they could teach you how to be a father to your kids. I needed to learn. And I felt like that man could teach me. This man must have forgave everything that I did to him, because I put that man through hell when he got with that woman, boy. Oh, Lord, did I put him through hell. And I remember at one point in time, he had his own business and I didn't have a job. And you did Narcotics Anonymous. I wasn't a humble dude when I got here. And I went and I said, dude, you're looking for somebody. Can I get a job? And he's like, what? And you know what? And he hired me. And I was the best worker that guy ever had. And that's not bragging. He's told me that out of it. He's actually told me he should have paid me $20-some an hour to run his company and he'd still have it. But when he started to get high, who do we not want around? No, sir. He ain't want me around. I'll beat him over the head with this mama right here. Weapons of mass destruction, right? You know? So, I'm talking about all this because I'm leading up to the point where, you know, he runs from the disease of addiction and takes my kids to Alabama. It's time to call the court systems, right? Nah. You know, you've never been their father. You don't have the right to stop this woman's dreams. This woman dreams of living down in that house in Alabama. You owe her the right to take these kids and live in Alabama. You know, you ever call domestic relations? How many people has ever been behind as a dad in domestic relations? You ever been behind? You know what I mean? You ever call them and tell them, how am I supposed to live? And they tell you, I don't care. Because it's not their responsibility to figure out how I'm supposed to live paying child support. It's their responsibility to make sure that them kids are paid for. So what I've learned that it is my responsibility to figure out how to make more money so that I can pay for them and pay for me, because if I'd have been taking care of business in the first place, I'd have been financially stable when I started having kids. So, I owe some amends to me. So it's time to do something better with my life. You know, some of the amends that I owe to them is also concerns me. So now, this hope to die dope fiend who dropped out in the 8th grade going to Southwestern High School, where there's like 300 white people out of 5,000 students, and I'm using that as an excuse not to go to school because I really just want to sit down in the yard and smoke weed all damn day and play basketball, because that's what we do in Baltimore. You know what I mean? I'm now enrolled in college. I make $45,000 a year as it is, and that just ain't good enough anymore. Because, like, you know, and it's funny because, like, I'm starting. It's like, dude, I'm listening. And I'm standing in line at this pizza shop, and these two kids from the local high school come walking in, and then, you know, and I'm really listening to him, you know, and they come walking in, they got their high school shirts on, and on the back of the high school shirts it says, if your dreams don't scare you, then you're not reaching high enough. This going back to school shit scares the hell out of me. You know, I remember standing in the admissions office looking at this lady thinking like, lady, could you please talk to me? Because I don't have the courage to talk to you first. You know what I mean? I'm standing there, she's staring at me, and I'm staring at her. She's staring at me, and I'm staring at her. She's staring at me, and I'm staring at her. So now I get scared, so I look at somebody else, and now she's staring at me, and I'm staring at her. So the anxiety gets to me, so I get up and I walk out the room. I go into the next room. For some reason, I got enough courage to talk to that lady in the next room. I don't know why. Listen, I don't know. But the amends that I'm making to myself, like, I'm walking through this fear. I got to do this. They deserve better. I deserve better. I've learned to love myself. Like, I've come to realize in the 11th step, I found out. I used to be that dude sitting in the meeting like, I don't know what God's will for me. Yes, I do. I read the literature. The literature clearly states that God's will for me is for me to be okay with myself. Always has been, always will be. I've never been okay with myself. I've always been different. So I thought, I've never, ever amounted to anything because of the paralyzing fear that I've felt all my life. So I'm starting to be okay. On most days, I am okay with who Will is. Because I know that if you're my fiance, I'm not going to put my hands on you. I know this because I've done the footwork now. You know, I've started taking responsibility for who I was when I walked through that door. You know, and I'm talking about dealing with this, and I'm talking about my kids don't want to be in Alabama. You know. What's the disease telling me? Put a couple bugs in their ear so they can go tell their mom they want to come back. Because I want to sabotage her happiness, because I don't want to go through what I'm going through right now. I don't want to feel what I'm going through right now. But the reality is, like, if that's not what God wants me to do. And I know this because I speak to Him. And He tells me, you know, Will, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're going to be able to see them. You're going to be able to take trips down there. You're going to be able to fly them up here. You're going to be able to go get them and bring them up here. Everything's going to be all right. You know? My son's 15 years old. He doesn't give a shit about me right now anyway. You know what that man wants right now? Resentment. That's what he wants. So, you know, it's imperative that I just sit still. It's imperative that I feel this. It's imperative that I don't add no. And she don't need to be in there. She already been on there like 4 times. There's no reason for her to add a 5th and a 6th. You know? And so that's where I'm at. You know, and I just wanted to share one more thing. You know, and then I'll close right after that with something. It says, we want to be free of our guilt. But we do not wish to do so at the expense of anyone else. We might run the risk of involving a third person or some companion from our using days who does not wish to be exposed. We do not have the right or the need to endanger another person. It is often necessary to take guidance from others in these manners. I didn't touch on the subject that I told you guys that I was like a pretend whore. You know what I mean? And you know, through that process, like, because I don't care about nobody but myself, and I don't care about nobody but making sure that I get the next nut, you know, I have a kid to another woman. And so I get clean, and you know, because I'm going to make the world right when I get clean, right? I'm going to do everything, and I'm going to fix the world, and I'm going to do all this. And thank God that steps are in place for a reason, because I get to this part of my process, and, you know, because I am learning to take responsibility for my actions now, you know what I mean? And I talk to my sponsor, and, you know, and I'm telling him, and he says, does this kid, how old is this kid? I said, I think he's like 5 years old. Does this kid got a dad? I said, yeah, the kid got a dad. Well, no, the kid don't got a dad. The kid got a guy there playing daddy, but he ain't got a dad. He says, was that dude with her when you slept with her and got her pregnant? Yeah, the dude was there, but he ain't the dad. He said, yes, he is. Yes, he is. And they separate. They separate. And everybody who's, when they separate, everybody who knows us, both of us, calls me up. Dude, that's your kid. I talk to my sponsor. So we'll reach out to her. See what she wants to do. You know, my fiance hates this topic. She really does. You know, so I reach out to her. You know, is he mine? She says, I don't know. I said, what do you think? She said, I think he is. I said, I think he is too. What do you want to do? Would you like to get a paternity test? She said, that's probably the best. So we make arrangements to get the paternity test. And I don't hear from her ever again. So she either got back with this man or she's not ready. Once again, God will set the stage. It's not my place to ruin this man's life. If that man is in place, he's been the dad all along. He's been doing a damn good job about it. The kid's not dead, so obviously, and she wants to stay with him, so obviously he's been taken care of. You know what I mean? It's not my place to ruin his life. He has no idea that I even slept with her. So, you know, what I'm finding out is it's not always about me. It's about other people too. And it's, and you know, and I'm not going to ruin her life. I'm not going to ruin his life. And most of all, I'm not going to ruin this kid right now and confuse the hell out of him, because he would only not understand what was going on anyway. Thanks for allowing me to share. I'm an addict named Will.